The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, that's enough of that intro music. We got to get into the show right now. Welcome to True Wealth Radio Show. I'm
that
your host, Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
And this is the greatest Tuesday you've had all week.
Indeed.
We are stoked to have you guys here today. We are not wasting any time on this one. Matt and I have talked about sometimes you got to go back to the well a little bit. You talk about things that you've talked about a little bit before, but maybe with a fresh set of eyes. And one of the things that I want our listeners to get an opportunity to learn about, because here we are, believe it or not, it is not too late. And it is to talk a little bit about IRAs today. It's in some ways really simple, but in some ways really complex. And it never ceases to amaze me. People that think they know everything about IRAs and then they learn something new and they go, "You're kidding me."
Right.
And I have seen this happen with financial professionals, too. I am at the point now where I will tell you, I never say I know everything because something will show up and I'll go, "Oh, my gosh, you're kidding me." Right. I mean, there's just so much. And I got to believe that we probably know way more than the typical person about these because it's just what we do all the time.
Right.
But the number of little things that to make them work. But at the same time, to understand just the most simple concept of why you even care about this. Right?
So I think I understand where we're going with this. So we're going to not only just talk about like the basics of an IRA or a Roth IRA, but we're going to kind of dive into later on in the show maybe some of the things people didn't know or some of the ways that they go wrong.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to take it even a step further. If you're willing to stick with me through this show, I'm trying to give you a framework of understanding so that you can start to make decisions about when IRAs are good, when they're bad, understanding some of the pros and the cons. And you don't, if we do this well, you're not going to have to memorize anything. You just need to understand the framework, and then you can know what to ask Google, and it will remind you.
There you go.
Right? And so if we do a good job, you'll go, "Oh, that concept makes a lot of sense. I don't remember the exact number, but I can look that up."
I like it.
Right? So what's the first thing, if Matt, can you just generically explain what is an IRA? Like, what does it mean? What was it sort of intended for?
Yeah, it's an individual retirement account. So IRA, individual. A lot of people don't understand that that means that there's not going to be, like, if you're a married couple, you're not going to both be, like, contributing to that IRA, right? Like, it's not a joint account. It's not for two people. It's for an individual person.
Okay. And so, do you know when these were sort of first created?
Actually, I don't. But I'm going to guess sometime in the 80s.
Close, actually. A little earlier.
Like 78?
74.
Okay.
It was created by the ERISA Act, right? The Employee Retirement Income Securities Act.
Okay.
And ERISA still exists to this day. It's sort of been modified and it's grown up. And think of it as
what was it in response to? Like, you know, like I feel like the government and everything's so reactionary, it seems like.
It's hard because this is literally before I was born.
Okay.
Right? It's been around long enough. You're talking about 50 years ago right now or more. And so you look at this and go, well, what was it in response to? But my sense is that it was in response to the idea, especially with interest rates being particularly high.
That's
and
true.
Social Security being, you know, questionable about its efficacy. It's like, well, could we put in place an incentive for people to start to save for their own retirements?
Mm-hmm.
Because keep in mind, when the government puts in place tax policy, it's basically a carrot or a stick. Right.
Okay.
They're trying to give you a sense of like, what are the behaviors that I would like you to do? If I want you to do something, I'll reward you for the behavior financially. And if I don't want you to do it, then I'll penalize you.
I got our answer, by the way.
I'm listening.
So the IRA was reactionary, and it was a reaction to the decline of defined benefit pension plans. So those were becoming more and more rare. Mm-hmm. People weren't getting pension plans. And so there was this gap where, you know, a lot of workers didn't have a way to save for retirement. And there was a lot of concerns about Social Security not being solvent in the future. So, like, we got to give the people some way to put some money, you know, aside for retirement.
Boy, the cynic in me comes after this, too, and says, doesn't it just figure when it became financially difficult for companies to take on the risk of a defined benefit plan?
Because
keep in mind, a defined benefit is saying you have to make sure that you can pay out a specified benefit for a retirement work. So basically, hey, this person's going to retire and you have to keep paying them after they retire.
Right.
And so
there's a lot of risk involved in that.
Especially because longevity really exploded since the 70s.
Right.
The average lifespan really extended. So
yeah, people weren't living till 65 and
right,
passing
like the
away.
Average person, it used to be Social Security started at 65 and the average person died at 62.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's pretty good odds for the Social Security Department. Today, people live into like 85.
Mm-hmm.
So these programs have to pay out a lot longer, which means they should be funded more, but they're not. And so the private sector recognized this is untenable. And you know where defined benefits still exist? Unionized jobs.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Right? But consider what that looks like. There are public sector employee unions. And there are private sector employee unions, and those are the ones that have pensions.
Right.
But there's virtually no non-unionized jobs with pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's because it's such an incredible risk to the company.
It is.
To have this ongoing responsibility for future finances, right? And there's a lot of expenses associated. You can still create pension plans to this day. They are still allowed. And I will tell you, this is one of those where it's like, if you make so much money that you're trying to figure out ways to hide it from the government, hide is probably not the right term. You're looking for ways to legally put away more money than you could put away into a 401k plan, for example.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to do it if you're a business owner. Okay, and so we're not going to make that the purpose of this show. But if you want to know more about defined benefit plans and how they might serve you, then see us after class, 541-375-0898. Subtle and shameless plug.
I like it.
But for the rest of us, IRAs were created, and it created some new opportunities, but it's not perfect.
No, because like here's something that people might not know. There are contribution limits.
Right. Here's something people may also not know. There are income limits that associated with those contribution limits.
Okay? Yep.
So contribution limits is how much money can you legally put into an IRA.
Right.
Okay. And just so you know, there's multiple types of IRAs too, right? SEP IRA, simple IRA, Roth IRA, traditional IRA.
And if your income is too high, you might not be eligible for a Roth IRA, for example.
Yeah, you can make too much money to be Roth eligible, and you can make too much money if you also have an employer-sponsored retirement plan. If you make too much money, you're unable to deduct contributions to your traditional IRA.
Correct.
Okay? And again, we're not trying to give the specific numbers as to what those limits
are. No, because they change all the
time. Every year.
Yeah.
Like they index to inflation and they change all the time. But you need to know that a pension was a benefit in the future that was going to be defined. Like, hey, we'll pay you X number of dollars, a percentage of your pay, whatever it may be. We have defined the benefit for the future. But if we don't define the benefit, then what would we define instead? We'll define how much you can save.
Right.
Hence the term defined contribution plan.
Mm-hmm.
And these are available to employers. You've probably heard of things like 401k plans.
Right.
It's a form of defined contribution. But the one that's available to everybody is the IRA. The individual retirement account is a defined contribution account. Now, trick question, Matt.
Okay.
Is there an income limit to a traditional IRA?
No, I think you can contribute to one no matter what your income is, but I think the big kind of like asterisk there, the gotcha, is you might not get a deduction on your income if you're over a certain threshold. So
Correct. You
can still do it, but you're not going to get the tax advantage
Correct.
Of it.
And so the real kicker here is if you end up with you make so much money that you're not eligible for a Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. If you make enough that you can't write it off, then you may as well switch to a Roth.
Do we
because
even...
the Roth is after tax. But if you make so much that you're not eligible for Roth, then you can go back to a non-deductible IRA. You know, there's a couple of interesting caveats about the non-deductible IRA.
Ooh.
Did you know that you are able to track your basis?
Right.
Okay. This is, by the way, Matt's dying to say this. Like, go ahead and tell this matters.
Well, I was actually going to take the route of even if you make too much money to directly put the money into a Roth IRA and you're forced over into the traditional IRA, that doesn't mean that you can't in the future make a conversion where you convert money from the traditional IRA to the Roth IRA. That's a whole separate animal.
It is. This is where I have to track, or I have to kind of jump in.
You're good, because you were going to talk about basis here a little bit.
Well, the reason I'm going to talk about basis, it's going to make us sound smart, right? So if you have a non-deductible IRA, because you just make too much money, you can track your basis using Form 8606.
Yep.
Okay, that's an IRS form. Your CPA or your tax people should know about it. But Form 8606 is what you use to track basis and report basis if you didn't get to write off an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
What I will tell you is there are gotchas, but if you know how to navigate them, you may be able to convert an IRA that you created after tax, right? Like a non-deductible IRA may be eligible for Roth conversion, and you may be able to sort of step around those income thresholds.
It's a weird thing, but it's not impossible.
It's probably more complicated than we want to go into on this show. What I would tell you is if you guys are really interested, send us an email to info@littlejohnfs.com. We may create like a special video or something about specifically about some of the caveats to this, or maybe we'll cover it on a future show. But if you really want to know more details about like what are the gotchas of what we call the backdoor Roth IRA.
Or even if people are curious about where the income limits are, right? Because if I'm a listener, I'm like, I'm making a decent amount of money. Do I fall within the income limits? We can talk about that too.
Yeah, that's a simple one though. If you were to just
I think I actually brought the numbers
in
here.
So,
wasn't it like your modified adjusted gross income has to be for single filers like $153,000 and a $228,000 for married people?
So for traditional IRAs, married people, I think if you're covered with a workplace plan, it's between $116,000 and $136,000. And so, if you're...
I'm talking like for like a Roth IRA.
Oh, Roth IRAs, married, $218,000 to $220,000.
Yeah, and I think they for 2025, I think they upped it to $228,000, maybe.
Nope, I'm looking at the 25 numbers right now.
Oh, okay.
So, but the non-deductible IRA limits, those are some different elements. The issue is that you phase out earlier. If you're single, you phase out by $83,000.
If you want the exact numbers, go to the IRS website. I'm sure it's on there.
The point of this show is not to hit the numbers today. The point of this is to let you know that they're relevant. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But so what we want to talk about next, though, is we've kind of established, like, all right, there's IRAs. I want to talk about, like, we know they existed because people couldn't, we're seeing the shrinking availability of pension plans.
Yep.
Okay. We know that you can only put so much in them each year. Okay. There's a bunch of other features that I think we kind of skipped over the important parts. I think we need to cover some of those.
What do we need to cover?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the whole concept of how the IRS treats these from a tax perspective.
Oh, we're going to take the IRS goggles and put them on?
IRS goggles because it's super relevant. But we are going to grab a break first. So stick around. When we come back, okay, we'll talk about the concept of how the IRS treats taxes on IRAs versus Roth IRAs versus that sneaky one that was like in non-deductible IRAs.
Ooh.
All of those matter. You want to know how this works, stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got Truewell on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with me today.
Matt Dixon.
And this is one that you're gonna wanna bookmark this show. Okay. Today you are getting insight into the world of IRAs. right? And it again, if it sounds boring, it's because maybe right this second you're like, I don't care. But you might care because this could be a real difference maker in terms of and you know why I care, Matt?
What?
Because we oftentimes people spend all this time trying to create more investment returns.
Mm-hmm.
But then they do really inefficient things with the money that kind of cannibalize the returns that they had. And so this is about efficiency, right? When you're playing the long game with investing, and investing is like that, the long game, you're talking 20, 30 years, then making good decisions and compounding those good decisions produces superior outcomes. Okay?
It's true.
And so that's why I think if you have this great foundation of understanding, it helps you make better decisions. Okay. Maybe the better decision is just, I better tag in a pro because I didn't realize that this was over my head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But let's get back to the original. So 1974, birth of the IRA, individual retirement account. And IRAs have some basic features to them. Can you explain what do all IRAs have in common in terms of like their tax treatment? What's going on there?
You're talking about like a traditional IRA.
Let's start. Yeah, traditional.
Yeah, okay.
When I use the term IRA, I assume traditional.
Okay.
If I want to talk about a Roth IRA, I'll call it a Roth.
Yeah, basically cool. What you're doing is you're saying, you know what? I don't want to pay taxes today. I want to pay taxes in the future. And so what you're...
what you're probably saying is I never want to pay taxes. But yeah.
So maybe you make $100,000, right? And let's just say you put $10,000. Well... we'll say less than that. Say you put $6,000 in your IRA. So you did that. Now the IRS is going to look at you and say you had $94,000 of income for the year. And so what you effectively did is you didn't pay taxes on that $6,000. You invested it instead. But what happens is when you go to retire, you're going to have, you know, a pot of money there. And when you hit a certain age, the government is then going to force you to start taking money out of that IRA, and you will pay taxes on that money that's coming out.
Yeah. So essentially, my summary of it is IRAs or any account that works this way essentially is you get to invest money pre-income tax.
Mm-hmm.
So And so this is, it's an adjustment to your adjusted gross income. Oh, my gross income is $100,000, but I make a $5,000 retirement plan contribution. I show an adjusted gross income now of $95,000.
Right.
And that's the tax base that the IRS looks at when they're assessing my tax liability. Okay. So you invest pre-tax. The money grows. And as long as it stays in that account, it grows tax deferred. That's important because if you have an investment and it makes a dividend or you sell the investment, you have to realize the dividend income as a taxable event. Or if you sell that investment and buy something else, you have to pay to capital gains taxes along the way, right? But in a retirement plan, it doesn't work that way. Everything is sheltered inside of this account. And so you can buy and sell investments and you can have profits. And you don't actually pay taxes on the profits because they're still in the account.
Yeah, the gain you're not paying taxes on until the money actually comes out of the IRA.
Here's the flip side of it, right? Capital gains taxes are typically cheaper than income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that goes into an IRA gets turned into an income tax in the future.
Right.
Okay? So you're converting the tax, but you're also deferring the tax.
And you make a good point because say your state taxes are, say, 10% and you're paying 20% federally.
Mm-hmm.
If you're paying 30% on it in taxes in the future, that's a sizable chunk compared to maybe a long-term capital gain of, say, 12%.
Yes, yes. So the capital gains treatment, however, there are still benefits to deferral because if you're not paying taxes as you go, that money continues to work for your benefit. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like, oh, I had $100 and $10 came out to pay taxes. Now I have $90 invested.
Well, I think
you have $100 the whole time, assuming the investment's growing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're keeping more money in the account to compound. And so that's the big caveat here is, but someday you do have to take the money out. Now, there's two aspects to this, right? There's the retirement date. And then there's required distribution date.
Mm-hmm. So
what's the first date? 59 and a half. What does that mean?
Yeah, 59 and a half is when you can start accessing those funds without any sort of penalty to it, right?
Like, whoa, what do you mean penalty?
Okay, so say you're 45 years old and you want to dip into that pot of money that you've been saving. They're going to come around and say, whoa, 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 you're not at 59 and a half years old where you know, you're eligible.
This was a retirement account. We had a deal.
Yeah, you were supposed to wait until you retire. Now, not only are you going to pay income taxes, so maybe 10% to the state, 20% to the Fed. So they're automatically, you've already lost, say, 30% of it. They're going to come along and also slap an additional 10% penalty on you for an early withdrawal before you reached 59 and a half years old. This now you might have come, depending on where you're at in the tax bracket, maybe you almost lost 50% of the money to taxes.
Yeah. And so that's the issue. Remember I said that the way the IRS views this, if they want you to do a behavior, they financially reward you for it. And if they don't, they penalize you.
Mm-hmm.
So these are retirement accounts. How do we know? It's literally in the name. Mm-hmm. Individual retirement account, IRA. Yeah. So, okay, if I take it out before retirement age, ding. Does that mean it's impossible to get money out of the retirement account before 59 and a half without penalty? No.
No.
No, it doesn't. There's all kinds of additional rules to navigate. But it needs to be for retirement. There are times that it may be eligible for first-time home purchase or for educational use, although that is specific to Roth IRA.
I was going to say, yeah, the traditional doesn't really fall in that landscape.
And the traditional doesn't work that way, but there are ways that you can get money out of traditional IRAs without the 10% penalty.
You think the government would have done it the other way around? It's like you would think, or maybe make it the same way for both, because if you're incentivizing people to do a Roth, the government's basically saying, just give us the money now. Like, we want your taxes now.
If you want to see me get cranky, let's talk about how the government has disincentivized colleges to control costs.
Yeah.
Right?
You going to loop that one in?
I'm not going to because it's too far down the rabbit hole. But I'll just tell you that, you know, you can take money out of a Roth IRA because they've already gotten most of their taxes.
Right.
Right? But they're like, but no, you can't take it out of here for education. And I just kind of go, well, thank goodness for some small favors. Because right now, they're happy to tell families that they have an expected family contribution for their student. But they seem perfectly also happy to put no cost controls whatsoever on universities that just escalate the costs. And I don't know about you, but I keep seeing these campuses get bigger and higher density and more dorms and more students and more money. And all the time I'm hearing their foundations coming and saying, we're so broke. Will you please donate to us? I'm
and like, the funny part
about?
Is it's like
you're just professional sports teams now.
Yeah. And it's like state-funded universities. And then, like, there's no cap on how much you raise it. There's a cap on a utility bill, right?
Right.
Like, that's the thing that really throws me for a loop. Yeah. We can cap the utility companies, but not the education facilities that are state-funded. Go make that make sense.
By the way, this is one of the reasons I'm a huge proponent of community colleges. And full disclosure, thank you to the voters that have allowed me to serve them on the Board of Education here at Umpqua Community College. And I'm really proud of the work that the college has done to try to maintain at or below.
Do you know what a blessing it was to go there?
Cost.
I mean, it was a huge blessing. I went to UCC for 2 years, and I walked away with more money than I had, like, between a basketball scholarship and, you know, some other academic scholarships. I left there with more money than I had, and that was able to pay for the university.
Yep. And universities have their place. I'm not here to say that education has no value. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's
ROI. Just ROI.
The ROI matters, and there's just not the incentive to control costs. And again, this is the IRA show, not the bash on college cost escalation show.
I had the grades to go to any of the universities I wanted to go to.
Oh, yeah.
You want to know why I chose Western?
Do tell.
It was the cheapest state university out there. That was the only decision maker.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. I'm going to get a four-year degree, and it's going to be the same degree whether I go to U of O or OSU or Western.
I think but universities have some soul-searching to do about the return on investment for their students, and they're going to really have to figure out how this works. And I don't think the answer is to try to game the system to force education requirements on careers, right? My weird example is the appraisal industry requires a bachelor's degree, in anything, and I'm not sure how that's relevant to doing appraisals, because there's stipulations by the state for how appraisals are to be done. But the barrier to entry is you must have a bachelor's degree now. And
really?
I just scratch my head and go, huh. So
did you learn how to do your appraisals at the university? No, you didn't.
And with that, we've officially gone off the rails, right? Now, look, the crux of this one was about the concept of how IRAs and retirement plans in general work, which is the money goes in before taxes.
Mm-hmm.
The money grows tax deferred. But if you haven't paid taxes on the way in, you pay taxes on the way out. I want you to keep that in mind, okay? Now, we're going to take a break.
Are we going to talk about like RMDs? What are we going to talk about?
So first, I'm going to leave you with this strange mental picture. I want you to think of a PVC pipe, okay? It's like 3 feet long, and the IRS is written right in the middle of this thing, okay? And everything goes in one in and out the other, and we're going to talk about how does that affect taxes. Stick with me. It'll make sense. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. I am Dave Littlejohn. In the studio today with me is
Matt Dixon.
You're supposed to just like shout your name.
Matt Dixon!
Like, Matt, I'm ready to go. Hey, if you're just joining us, we're talking about IRAs today. We're trying to stay on track. You know us and rabbit holes, they're just so tempting. But I promised at the last break, I wanted to give you a framework for taxes on pretty much all retirement plans in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, this is a little bit risky because it can sound like I'm offering tax advice. It's not tax advice. It's a framework of understanding. Okay? The framework of understanding, and I paint this mental picture of a tube, right? Or like a pipe, like a piece of PVC pipe, and water goes in one end and comes out the other end, right? And I want you to think of that as the money flow in the world, and the tube is the IRS. And the way the IRS views this is, look, if you pay taxes on something before it goes into this pipe, what comes out the other end has already been taxed, kind of, okay? If you haven't paid taxes when the water goes in the pipe, what comes out the other end, then you pay the taxes, right? So the thinking is they get you on the way in or they get you on the way out. What is the catch?
Right? They don't get it twice?
So they don't get it twice, but the catch is whether or not there was new money that was created while in the pipe, right?
If
I invest $100 and then 20 years later it's worth $200, the IRS says, well, if you paid taxes on the $100 that went in and everything's been deferred since then, there's $100 you haven't paid taxes on.
Unless it's in a Roth, though.
Well, you're getting ahead of me. You're getting ahead of me, Matt.
Spoiler alert.
Exactly. You're going to spoil it. Right? So I'm going to, you know what? Just for that, I'm going to make you talk about
do it
non-deductible after-tax IRAs.
Okay.
Okay? Now you explain what happens with money you didn't get to write off your IRA,
mm-hmm.
and so you put in your, let's say it's $10,000 went in there.
Yeah.
Okay? None of it you didn't get a tax break on it.
You're saying you like you put the money in and you did.
Yeah. By the way, you can't do $10,000. That's too much into an IRA like this, but it's great because the math is easier for Matt. I'm looking out for you.
Thanks.
On radio, Matt.
I love that.
Okay. So
right.
You have an after-tax contribution to an mm-hmm. IRA.
Right.
Okay? And 20 years go by, and that $10,000 account has grown to $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You're over age 59 and a half, and you take a distribution from the account.
Right.
You properly filed your Form 8606 to document the basis in your account.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to be taxed, Matt?
Ordinary income.
Okay, so the money comes out.
Mm-hmm.
How much of it? Is taxed as ordinary income? There's $50,000. $10,000 was already taxed.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to be taxed, Matt?
Are you on which sleeve? Are you saying on the $10,000 or on the $50,000?
So $50,000 total account value, commingled $40,000 of money been taxed and $10,000 that has.
Well, the $40,000 you're going to pay taxes on that sleeve.
You're going to have to pay taxes on the $40,000 that was created.
Yeah, and it sucks.
Yeah. Now the question is, and I should have known the answer to this, but it's so rare that I actually haven't looked this up. The question is it LIFO, FIFO, or a ratio? I think it's a ratio.
Is it? For some reason, I thought it was the other way around.
I'm going to ask ChatGPT.
I thought it was like the last in is the first out. That was my understanding. Maybe I'm wrong. Click. Keyboard stroke. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And the answer is thinking, dot, dot, dot.
I know. It's still doing it. Withdraws. So the already taxed portion, but what it doesn't tell me is, all right, so if I
see, and this is a perfect example of there's so many intricacies to this to where even the most versed financial professional still has to occasionally look stuff up, but the key is, do you know where to go to find the answer?
Yeah, and that's the part that I'm trying to get, and it's not giving me the whether or not it's pro rata is apparently what it is.
Hmm.
All right. Pro rata means that $50,000, $10,000 of it had already been taxed, $40,000 hadn't. That's a ratio of about 1 to 4.
Right.
So 20% of the account, 20% of the $50,000 has already been taxed, which means when the money comes out, you'll pay taxes as if 80% of the money was taxable. As ordinary income.
That sounds right.
Okay. Now, the reason this is relevant is because had this been in an annuity contract, it may have been different. It may have been considered LIFO, meaning the last money that went in is the first money that comes out. So, you know, it just depends. The last money is the money that you have to pay
and that
the tax
could be,
on.
You want to talk about how that could potentially be beneficial?
Well, I mean, it could be potentially beneficial because if you're getting back principal, then that's not taxable.
Right. Well, at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, it means your tax rate could potentially go up if you're getting the interest all at the end.
I guess that's relevant because say you scale back to maybe like part-time work and you're able to get money out, but the money that you're getting out isn't being taxed the initial phases. You could actually potentially look at doing a Roth conversion, right? Where you take that traditional IRA money, take it out because your income is down because you're not working as many hours. Mm-hmm. And it's like you could have a lot of income in those early stages of retirement.
So I'm going to just sort of cut to the chase on why this. You guys don't need to figure all this out per se. I mean, you should if you're going to do this yourself and try to be efficient. Remember, I made this throwaway comment early in the show, and I said, people, you know, they want to focus only on returns, and they forget about efficiency.
Yeah, it's like, I got 8%, and I should have got 9.
Well, the whole point of having the IRA at your disposal, or potentially the Roth IRA as well. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But the IRA, yes, it gives you the ability to take money that may be in a high tax environment today and push it out into the future where you could be in a lower tax environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the benefit is if you shift your tax burden to a lower burden in the future, you keep more of the money. Now, here's an example where this is kind of reality in today's tax code. There's a big gap up between the 12% tax bracket and the 22% federal bracket. 10% gap. So every dollar above a certain threshold of distribution goes up by 10%.
That's a big jump.
It actually is. What would you say if I could tell you that, look, by simply being more efficient, you could get 10% higher return on your investment?
You'd be googly-eyed.
Right? That makes a big difference, especially if we're talking about the value in the future.
Mm-hmm.
10% savings on the future value versus, you know, hey, today it's $100, but tomorrow it's $1,000. Okay, well, it's a $10 savings today. It's $100 savings in the future.
How do you even sleep at night? Like, I just imagine, like, you're laying there and you're like, numbers here, numbers there, 10%.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, I don't lay in bed thinking about the numbers. I think about the concepts.
Uh-huh.
Right? It, to me, this is a chess game. And chess with your money is about having a good strategy.
Right.
Okay? And so a good strategy ultimately creates victory, or at least improves the probability of a victory, right?
Right.
You know, and that's the problem, is that sometimes life is a pretty cruel counterplayer,
mm-hmm.
you know, or opponent, if you will. I hate to think of life as your opponent, but in finance, it feels
but
like...
But the IRS is your opponent. Like, if you know their code and you know kind of like yeah. all the instruments and tools that are available to you, if you can push that those puzzle pieces together in the right places, it's like, well, you didn't really like cheat the system, but you leveraged it to your full advantage.
Yeah. And I like to think of the IRS less as an opponent than I do a partner that I have no say in, that gets to make whatever rules they want, and they get to take money regardless of whether or not I want to give it to
them.
We
pay taxes because we live in a civilized society. It's like the price you pay.
Yeah. And I would say I don't wholesale resent taxes.
Right.
I resent the idea that the government is so radically hungry, and its solution is to say, well, those that become particularly successful in our financial system will be penalized by we will say, because that is the minority group, we'll say, well, then let's make sure that that group, they can't defend themselves by vote, so let's just get everybody else to agree to take more from them, right? We'll just make their obligations higher. And I'm like, so you mean to tell me that the person that makes $100,000 a year and they have a blended tax rate in the state of Oregon of like 15%, but the person that makes $300,000 a year has a blended tax rate of 35%.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, well, that seems kind of fair, right? You know, they have more. They should pay more. You go, yeah, but let's do the math, right? The $100,000 person pays $15,000 in taxes. The $300,000 person pays $105,000. They're not getting that much more out of the government. In fact, arguably much less.
Right.
And what people say is, yeah, but they have more, so screw them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think, huh, weird attitude.
Yeah.
Right? Because what it's sort of acknowledging is like, well, I'll never be that person, so I need to treat them as, you know, a utility, a resource to help me. And I'm like, well, the American dream really is dead if you think that the solution to pulling you up is to pull everybody else down.
Unfortunately, that's been a narrative that's really been pushed, right? Like,
I think it has. Well, it plays so well for a vote.
Oh, it right? sure does.
It's not fair that that person has money.
Yeah.
We should make them pay their fair
Let's
share.
Let's take it and give it to you. Well, and then it's like, vote
we should,
deposit.
We should take a subjective amount and not define what it is and insist that because it's more than what you think it is, it's their problem. Like,
mm-hmm.
oh, geez. I mean, politics is gross that way. And yet, it is what it is. Look. We got one elephant in the room about IRAs that we got to talk about.
Big elephant or small elephant?
This one, I feel like it's the elephant.
Oh my gosh, okay. There's only one. It's the last
it's
not, one.
It's the most important one, and it is the idea of why are Roth IRAs such a remarkable tool for financial planning?
Okay.
Right? I don't want to oversell this because it turns out it starts to sound like everybody should have a Roth IRA. But man, there is some killer utility with these things. We want to talk about it, but we got to grab our last break.
Let's do it.
So we will come back. And if you listen to no other part of the show, shame on you, actually. No, but you want to come back for this. Roth IRAs and sort of the caveats and why they are so cool. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Yeah, take that.
Hmm.
I know. Now there's, so just so you know,
there's
here we are. We're talking about Roth IRAs on the final segment of the True Wealth Show here. Roth IRAs are really cool, but this is a very real thing. Let's quickly, Matt, can you quickly, like, what are the, what Roth IRA, how does it work? And let's talk about the 5 year real quick.
Yeah. So Roth IRA, you jam money into this thing. You've already paid taxes. The money goes in there. It grows a bunch. You want to pull money out after 59 and a half. You can do it, and you can even access all that growth. And guess what? You're not paying taxes.
Yeah. The magic is, if qualified, Roth IRAs turn after-tax money and the growth becomes tax-free.
That's the big piece, and the growth.
Right? But there are a couple caveats to this, right? One, you're supposed to be over the age of 59 and a half.
Income limits to put money into it.
Yeah, there's thresholds of how much money you can earn to even have a Roth IRA, right?
Yep.
And we've talked about, there's a concept called the backdoor Roth IRA. And you can Google it, but more importantly, you can give us a call, right? And we can walk you through it and make sure that you don't blow stuff up, because you don't want to have other IRAs and stuff like that, because you could create a tax surprise that's negative.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
But Roth IRAs, they are invested with after-tax money. That investment grows tax-deferred, just like an IRA, but if qualified, it can come out tax-free. But this five-year rule is a big deal. What does that mean?
Yeah, so basically, like, say you go open a Roth today. You have to wait 5 years before you can access the growth from it without any sort of issues, right? And now, if you put $10,000 in today, you can go pull that $10,000 out, right? Like, that's not going to be an issue.
That's money you've already paid taxes on.
Right, but it's the growth. So if $10,000 turns into $30,000, you've got a $20,000 gain, and you've got to wait 5 years to get to that money.
Right. 5 years, and then that becomes Roth eligible, right?
Yeah.
Now, a couple things that could happen, right? If you're not 59 and a half, right, and you're not doing any of the other exceptions for access, it could be taxable, okay? We talked about earlier on the show, a couple of ways that you could access Roth money before the age of 59 and a half is first-time home purchase,
yep,
or qualified educational expense. But keep in mind, that doesn't mean that you won't pay taxes on the growth. It just means that you won't pay the 10% penalty on the growth.
Right. That's a big caveat.
So it's not Roth money anymore. It's not like, oh, I have tax-free money for my house payment. No, you don't. You have after-tax, the growth, you pay taxes on the growth, your principal is returned to you, and then you can make that contribution for a first-time home purchase. And again, this all needs to be documented properly. So it's like, don't just take my word for it. Make sure that you've got the right tax pros guiding you through this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the five-year rule is really important, because if you have different places with different Roths, they can each have their own five-year rule,
mm-hmm,
right? And so if you put money in, now here's the funny thing. It's on when the account starts, not when the last contribution is. It's not like, oh, well, my last contribution now has a five-year deadline, right? I started a Roth 20 years ago. I've been funding it every year. Great, it's qualified. It's been 20 years. But I started a Roth, and then I had a Roth 401k plan, and I rolled it over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, new five-year clock on your Roth 401k after rollover. Okay, those are some of the gotchas. And so that's why the five-year rule is really important to know and understand. And you don't just listen to the guys on the radio or on YouTube and go, oh, clearly this is it. You do your homework and you make sure you do this right if you're going to start, you know, combining Roth IRAs and so forth.
Right.
Okay? But my understanding, okay, and again, this is unqualified, not tax advice when I say this, but if you have multiple Roth IRAs, all of them have already passed their five-year rule, they are eligible to be combined. But mm-hmm, that's something Matt and I were actually not fully in agreement. He's like, are you sure?
Because I thought that, you know, maybe it starts that five-year clock again.
Yeah.
But
my understanding is that the five-year clock is based on the date of the contribution, not every time the contribution moves that it gets reset.
Mm.
Right? So it's and so it's that contribution date. And that's why, like, Roth 401k is a separate tranche of contributions than an existing Roth IRA.
Right.
Hence the new clock when it rolls over.
Mm-hmm.
And we may or may not have run across that in real life and had to learn how that worked.
Yeah. Okay?
This is the story of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to mess this stuff up, because the mistakes, that's where it gets expensive. Yeah.
But keep in mind, here's one of the things we don't even talk about with Roth IRAs and why I think they're so cool. In retirement, it's no secret that while I think it has a place, ideally speaking, I would prefer that people were able to self-fund if they needed to have medical care in retirement, meaning have enough of a nest egg that you can afford it, okay? Because long-term care is really expensive, and it's sometimes unreliable. Like, it just sort of, the companies get out of the business or whatever. And so, or they price you out. They just raise premiums to the point that you pay for long-term care insurance for a while, then it goes away. So it's like, yikes, I'd rather you build your own nest egg for that. Roth is a really great potential security blanket if you need to have the ability to access money in retirement without blowing up your tax brackets.
Yeah.
And if you die with it, it's way better for heirs because they get it tax-free also.
Yeah, how many times have we seen heirs go to receive an inheritance from a traditional IRA?
And then they have a big tax bill.
Yeah, because they have 10 years to get all that money out. So, you know, $4 million in a traditional IRA and then two kids splitting that up. It's like you each have to get $2 million out in 10 years. That's $200,000, you know, assuming no growth, $200,000 per individual.
On top of whatever you're already
And you already have a high paying job. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it all goes to the IRS, right?
Right.
So, yeah. Anyways, I look at the clock and realize we're already out of time. You can see how many layers of complexity can go into this simple,
thank goodness for beautiful, wonderful tax planning and efficient software.
Exactly. Look, if you have an IRA and you've got questions, or if you are just trying to figure out what to do with it, Matt, how do they reach us?
Yeah, shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com or call us at 541-375-0898.
Right. Also, if you've got additional questions you'd like addressed on the radio, you can send us an email and we'll try to get to those. But feel free to reach out. That's what we're here for. Consultations are free. But as I look at the clock, I can see we're out of time. So until next time, this is David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on this station.